stay far away from the door if there's a chance of it opening up. They hear a voice in the hall outside and hope that it just passes by. Some people live with the fear of a touch and the anger of having been a fool.
11:10 on 720 WGN. Matt Pubala here with you until 1 a.m. Thanks for staying up late with us, everybody. So set aside everything else that's been going on in this world. We had an inauguration this week, and during that inauguration, we had a poem read by a young woman, 22 years of age. 22 years of age. If you didn't see it and hear it, you have read about it if you're paying attention to anything, because it's outside of the damn Bernie meme, which we can't get away from now. The other thing that has been nothing but brought up is how amazing the poem was, how amazing the poise was of young Amanda Gorman, who became the youngest person to deliver a poem at a U.S. presidential inauguration. Her poem, The Hill We Climb, has probably made a lot of you, I would assume, think about poetry maybe for the first time in a while, maybe made you inspired for our country. It was a beautiful moment after weeks of frightening times for our country, of uncertain times for our nation. It was the youth of America raising up our hopes for what we can be. The poem is called The Hill We Climb. Let's listen to it right now before we bring our guests in. Here is Amanda Gorman from the inauguration.
When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother, can dream of becoming president, only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it. Would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So, while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the west. We will rise from the wind-swept northeast, where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked south. We will rebuild, reconcile and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Amanda Gorman at the inauguration this past Wednesday. That was quite a moment. Joining us on the phone right now. So I heard that this week and I thought, wow, you know, that was amazing. It was moving. It was terrifying to see a young woman up on the stage in front of a president and a vice president and a weird empty crowd and all of the things going on to deliver with that much power. I can't imagine what that would have been like, especially at the age of 22. She was not picked out of nowhere. This is a very esteemed young woman who has had many honors already in her very young life. Certainly none greater than that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about poetry, because it's certainly not something, you know, I'll admit right here. I bet like most of you, I'm a little bit scared, a little bit intimidated by poetry. You know, I know my Frost, I know a little Poe, but after that, I'm like most people, probably falling off to the side. So let's shine a light on poetry. Joining us on the phone right now, our two guests are Kevin Koval. He's a creative director of the MacArthur Award-winning cultural organization, Young Chicago Authors, where he founded Louder Than a Bomb, the Chicago Youth Poetry Festival. Also joining us is CM Burroughs. She's an associate professor of poetry at Columbia College in Chicago. She's the author of two poetry collections, The Vital System and the just released Master Suffering. And thank you both so much for being with us. CM, I want to start with you. What does it mean to you to see a young woman bringing poetry? I know we generally have a poem at an inauguration, but what did it mean to you to see the light shined on poetry in this young woman this week?
Honestly, I was pretty thankful for it. It had been a while since we'd had a poem at the inauguration, and to have such a young woman reading it, I think signified perhaps more hope than even her poem did, that we can make it through the pandemic, that we can make it through the strife of, you know, inequality right now. And you're right that she had quite a bit of poise there. And I was impressed, too, that she was able, despite the times, to use, you know, the words we and our so much. That's what really disarmed me about the poem, because we're living in such difficult times right now.
We are. I don't know when she wrote the poem, but I did read that she amended it just in the last week or so after what happened in the Capitol. So those words were pretty fresh, at least some of them were. But it really was an amazing moment. Kevin, talk to me a little bit about poetry and what it means to you, and what it means to you to have it be back in the limelight a little more than it probably normally is?
Yeah, well, I think the nation peaked at what we've known for a long time and what we've been privy to in youth cultural space for, you know, the last 30 or 40 years. I think some of what you saw yesterday is, or not yesterday, but this week, you know, the inaugural poet, you know, speaks to something that is emblematic of a long lineage, particularly of Black women who have, I think, decentered the dominant narrative in order to encourage and incorporate many more voices to be at the center of our democratic process in the civic space. And that was very dope and refreshing to see. But you know, Amanda Gorman represents, I think, a movement around the country of on-the-ground youth cultural organizations that are doing really engaging pedagogic work to encourage young people to talk about who they are and what they care about and where they come from. And, you know, I feel very lucky to work at an organization that has, you know, folks like Amanda in our space on a very regular basis.
Kevin, talk to me a little bit about the form of poetry that seems to be taking shape here with Amanda's poem. I know that you helped found Louder Than a Bomb, the Chicago Youth Poetry Festival, which I'm imagining is a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize if I am, I know poetry slams became kind of a big thing. And in my mind, that's a bit of a blending of poetry with performance, maybe more so than we think of it when we think back of the poets of yesteryear. And Amanda really had not just a poem, but a performance. And how important is that in the way that poetry is evolving in current times?
Well, yeah, I mean, her performance was outstanding. But I think it's important to know that poetry has always been performed, and poetry has always been performed well. I mean, poetry is something that has lived in our communal spaces as a way to tell and keep our histories since, you know, we had the ability to speak. And it was song and poetry that, you know, first told us about who we are and continues to in a lot of ways. I think the American public education system has done us a great disservice about what, you know, traditionally it's considered to be poetry. You know, we have taught for far too long a whitewashed European-centered canon of poetry that has really made a lot of us, myself included when I was a young person, hate the form, hate poetry, be, as you said, maybe afraid of it or not understand it. And I think that's because it was museumed and reified in a way that you know, not only the Black arts movement in the 50s and 60s, of course, prior to that, the Harlem Renaissance, the renaissance of you know, Black writers in this city, giving language back to the people. But also, I think, you know, in this moment, you know, we have to credit, I think, hip-hop cultural practice. If it wasn't for rappers who gave so many of us the permission to tell our own stories and to run to the library, to run to the dictionary and put pen to paper, I don't think we would have this cultural movement. And I think the profound thing about hip hop as a cultural practice is that it is radically democratic in nature and participates in an African diasporic practice of call and response. If you see someone doing something that is not far from you, you feel emboldened to perhaps try it yourself. And I think that's one of the things that's happening today in communities across the country, is that young people are seeing people who look like them, you know, recite poems in public spaces, in their classrooms, in their community centers, on television, and they then are trying it themselves. And I think that's a very powerful piece, because I think the story, the poem, has an ability to connect us in ways that I think we are in desperate need of right now.
CM, you're a professor of poetry. What is your take on why kids, you know I did, Kevin mentioned that just the way that we've been taught poetry over the years, is that what maybe holds so many of us back from embracing the form more?
Absolutely. My own parents, you know, they get my books, but they don't always understand them. And you know, I'm like, we can talk about it. Sit down. But, and my mother will say, I hate poetry, because she grew up learning to hate it, because most people were forced to read people who didn't look like them, speak like them, or say anything regarding their own lives. And it was just very distant, very arcane. And so having poems like Amanda Gorman's now brings us to a present and future moment where I think that the poems are going to be clearer to folks who might not have any education in poetry itself.
Yeah.
And so her performance added to that clarity, I think, and her use of just the we, the our, brought everyone listening to her space of sort of hope and belief.
You got to love parents, CM, that, you know, you're a poet, you got a book out. You know, I hate poetry, honey. I'm going to tell you, great that you got a book out. I really hate poetry. Parents will always be very honest with you, won't they?
You know, that's what makes relationships live, right? Honestly. You know what, the only time that she said she really understood my work is when I read it aloud. So I think Kevin's on to something certainly here by saying poetry has always been something oral, something performed, and it persists now, really thriving in this city because of that nature of performance and oratory and our ability to share with each other in a way that's verbal and visual.
We've got to get to the news here in a minute, but CM, do you have a piece? Is there something you could recite and share with us to close?
Sure, yeah. I'll read a poem for my father, actually. It's called Basic Training. I learned to clean house at age 10 under the instruction of a U.S. Marine. My father teaching me that a job worth doing was a job worth doing well. Task turned meditation. My introversion summoned space and redundant duties of house. Ritual rescuing of counters under the day's crumb. Esophageal kicks of the Hoover in hand. Hypnotic polishing of torsieres, side tables, and talons from the hands and feet of mahogany chairs. Lastly, I could sit and survey my balancing song. It was gratifying. I could set my mind to changing a thing, and it would change.
That's beautiful.
Here's that.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you both for shining a light. Tell me, guys, if people want to learn more about poetry, get more involved in poetry, or embrace what this week meant to them, where would you recommend they start online? Of course, you know, I will mention again that CM has a couple of books out, The Vital System and Master Suffering, both out from Tupelo Press. Kevin, CM, places you would recommend people get online or find more poetry or start embracing poetry better?
So I'll just bring up immediately the Poetry Foundation just off Michigan Avenue at 61 West Superior comes to mind. They've got a library that is solely poetry that's open to the public. They have constant events that are virtual right now, but events of performance, poetry, music that are open to the public and free. And that's a place where I've made a kind of home in the city because it's such a wealth of poetry, and their website, the Poetry Foundation.org or poetryfoundation.org, has tons of resources of subject matters you can look up for certain poems and exercises you could do, et cetera.
That is perfect. Thank you both so much. Kevin Koval, CM Burrows, again, poetryfoundation.org. Thank you so much for being with us.